Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Fred. I am responsible. I am accountable. I am capable of assisting people to find their true voice and then deliver it effectively into the world around us. With 40 years in mental health, 32 of them as a psychiatrist, and then a massive amount of conversations, including podcasting and expert speaking, keynote speaking, I have the opportunity to really see the magic that it takes to find one's authentic self and then deliver it effectively into the world. And if you're like me, you can see that now more than ever, that's what's called for. So today is that day. Now is that time. Come forth. Join me in the broadcast. You'll see on the other side of this at True Voice with Dr. Fred. Sam.
I was lullabied to sleep by your intro music and your nice
come forth, bro. Show up.
I'm forth.
All right, good.
All right.
Dr. Fred here. Welcome to another wonderful edition of True Voice with Dr. Fred. I'm here with my frequent co-host, Sam Morris. And we don't have an additional guest today. Last week, we had an amazing guest, Anders Gustafsson. If you caught that episode, I'm sure you enjoyed it as much as we did. He's an amazing guest, and he'll be back again. Anders just a fine human being. Well, isn't he just great? He's just
he's great, man. He's all set. He's like all positively reinforced for the apocalypse.
The societal collapse. Yeah,
he's ready to go. He's ready to go and take this on in a really positive way. I admire that.
Yeah. And yeah. speaking he's of that,
rather than complaining about it, he's just doing his thing. He's getting ready, and he's
sort of like preparing for the next rainstorm or something. He's just preparing for the end of society as we know it. You know,
yeah. And I'm not sure. I know for sure that I'm not equally prepared, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
There's two things I want to say about it. I saw a book the other day that somehow I went down the rabbit hole chasing while I was scrolling through the social media and somehow caught up in that world that you never really know if you're ever going to get out once you get into it. And I caught a book that someone had written about, I think it's called the First 72 Hours. And it's written. Have you seen this bullshit?
No, I can see a movie coming out of this, though. It sounds like it's certainly good fodder for a disaster movie.
Yeah,
it's apocalyptic kind of disaster sort of situation. Is that what we're talking?
People who aren't going to survive an apocalypse are going out in the first 72 hours because that's when they didn't prepare for. But if you get past those 72. Then you get to live in the post-apocalyptic hell that I'm sorry, the post-apocalyptic world that offers us, sanctity of having survived the blip in time that kills off half or three quarters of the humanity.
Okay.
All right. And what are we going to do? They spend the rest of our lives cremating our friends. What are we going to do after that, Sam?
You know, I think, if it's as chaotic as I think it might be, if this were to actually happen, I think I might want to leave it to the people who have children and grandchildren and stuff like that, you know, to take care of it. It's like they've got some kind of investment. I don't personally really have an investment. Assuming my dog is gone too, then other than that, I don't really have an investment personally. So,
Exempt from picking up dead bodies and shit at the post? Well,
it's tough to pick up a dead body from a wheelchair. You know, true. It's just a practical thing. I'm just being practical here. and there's also probably more of a likelihood that I become one of those dead bodies also, given the fact that I use a wheelchair as well. It's one of those things that in the comforts of modern civilization, you know, we've created an environment where being in a wheelchair is somewhat practical and easy. But if we had no gas supply, if we had no electricity, if we had, the internet is down and all of those things, things for those of us who are disabled suddenly become a little trickier. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, it's
true. In that scenario.
Yeah. So in some ways, you're already like a foot in the grave, compromised kind of thing.
Yeah. So, you know, we we shall see. It's a good question. It's one of those things that you simply can't. I don't know how people really prepare for this sort of thing. Those who are the people who have the mindset that they're actually preparing for something. Like how? I mean, is collecting a bunch of soup cans and artillery in some underground bunker and a bunch of toilet paper and guns and soup, and is that really preparing at all? Like, that just sounds like paranoid naivete. Yeah, that's
the book says that, like, those things, though, they are the ones that are conventionally known to carry you into the next post-apocalyptic world are not they're not the real things. Like, you don't need a rifle, you definitely don't need to be hoarding toilet paper and and water, and you probably need some water somewhere, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know that I would find enough of a reason to stick around. That's not to be morbid, and it's not to be. It's just kind of like this experience, this particular human life. I have my appreciations for everything that I have. I have a lot of gratitude for what I have now, but that could easily shift very quickly if shit were to hit the fan and I didn't have the same level of freedoms and comforts that I have now. I could easily have a different perspective all within the course of 24, 48 hours. Suddenly Mr. Zen Warrior Sam would not be so Zen Warrior anymore and just be kind of like, you know what? Fuck this shit. Yeah. Like,
I hear you on that. And you know what's interesting is I feel like I've reached a similar space. Like, I'm glad that they gave us the last 3 or 6 months to get my, get your affairs in order, sort of thing. Like, make sure that if it happens next week, you've done as best you can. Like, I paid off my last human. Like, my debts now are to companies. I don't owe any humans any money. I owe companies money. Okay. And so I feel like, okay, that's a good deal. That's a good deal. I don't want to owe any more humans anymore. It's like, if I'm gonna live, so I lost a friend yesterday, like a total shocking friend just died. She just died. She died. Like, she keeled over with a heart attack. She's like in her 40s and she out of here.
This is the second conversation in a row that I've had about a recent friend being lost. And the death seems to be on the agenda today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, or it seems like
tell me more, Fred.
I don't know much about this one exactly. Someone called me, a mutual friend. It was someone who hung out with me and when I was in early True Voice podcasting days. And she was then in the tribe. She was in the Facebook tribe. She didn't actually take the course, but she went to all three of my summits. And one of our mutual friends called me. She said, "Did you hear about Barbara?" And I'm like, "What?" She said, "Yeah, she's dead." And I'm like, "What?" So I double checked with our closest mutual friend. And indeed, she keeled over yesterday, and the report is a sudden heart attack. And yeah, if we start getting a bunch of these things, I guess that's what we'll have to deal with. I guess if it's time is now for people to start keeling over, then I guess that'll just become part of life. And, when you got to get to the store, you got to like take an extra 10 or 12 minutes because there might be dead bodies in the road. That's what I'm thinking. It's kind of a fucking inconvenience.
I don't know. Every time I go to the store, I see at least 70% dead bodies walking around anyway. That's a whole other question. What's the difference between the dead bodies and the vast majority of people I see when I go to the store who are walking around in a really good question, live body?
It would be great if it took out those people only.
Yeah.
I mean, they're already dead, I think they would deal with a whole
slew of the population. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think that would be okay with me. I don't know. If you're already dead and that's what you're voting to live your life as dead, then dude, there's the door. Don't let the door hit you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think it is, Fred? Maybe this is a rhetorical question, but what is that difference between the zombification way of being?
Zombification.
And which we know we can, we know what we're talking about. We have a mutually agreed upon understanding of what that term means. And what is that, that it differentiates that between the spark that makes someone actually aware that they are living?
Yeah. I love this. Well, that's a good question. Now I got to actually dig in. You know, when Valentino's getting ready to shit, you know how he like moves his paw through the, kitty litter, like, oh, he's getting ready, like it's important. And that's that's what I'm doing right now. So give me a second. Okay. Give me a second to dig in.
I'm glad it's he's getting ready to shit and you're not getting ready to shit.
I don't feel like I'm going to shit right now. I don't know. It could happen. But I think the difference, you know, Sam, I think there's something about the world of appreciation, gratitude, forgiveness, love, you know, some idea of maybe a willingness to embrace fear and move anyways, maybe having had enough painful experiences and gratitude for having come back and made something of myself or a contribution, like somehow reach a cosmic, maybe I guess the way I would call it is like a cosmic, not acceptance, but there's a word better than acceptance. Say, like somehow I have come back from having given up enough times that a validation, a validation that there might be a purpose and that either way I'm going to die. And I don't know, you know, I think eating good is important. I think the medicines we take can certainly kill our spirit. Maybe there's a willingness to look into cosmos or into realities that are beyond the flat earth realities that we were taught in school. And then taking psychedelics seems like there's another one that kind of opens up new realms of possibility and therefore brings a spark back to life for some people. I think, like I said, eating and drinking well, loving others. I don't know. It's a good question. What do you think? Is it a protoplasmic thing or is it intentional?
Yeah, well, here's the way I see it. I think a lot of us are born with the spark of recognizing that we're alive. And then by the time we're 7 or 8 years old, it starts to get sapped from our psyche. And it happens so insidiously that we don't even notice it happening. And I think what happens is we take on the program of the culture. I think that the culture itself has its own sort of form of mass hypnosis that is just this sort of insidious programming that people sort of absorb, and that becomes what it is to be alive. You know, you have your sports team that you like, you have your foods that you like and you dislike, you have your shows, you have the cars that you're interested in, you have some romantic feelings from now and then, you have the ex-boyfriend, the ex-girlfriend, the person you want to fuck, the person you're glad you never fucked. You have all those things, but they're all kind of part of this sort of program that you didn't even really choose that gets put sort of lodged into your brain. And there's something to be said about something that shocks that out of the system. And I remember early on in my own life when I was, you know, 16, 17 years old, with the power of my first LSD trip going, it's like electroshock therapy on my identity, going, holy shit, the hell? Like, whoa, there's this, all of this programming inside of my own mind. And now I'm aware of the programming inside of my own mind. And then there's this separate observer awareness, seeing the programming from an objective, as a more of the object of my awareness, and no longer being as in the program. And then realizing that everyone is going around programmed. and there's nothing shocking them out of that program. I think sometimes trauma can shock people out of the program. I think sometimes psychedelics, I think sometimes the right kind of love can shock people out of the program. But I think it takes a lot. And I think the program is so insidious and all-consuming. I mean, it's in every Hollywood movie. It's in every advertisement. It's in every newspaper. Not that we read newspapers anymore, but whatever. It's in the social media. There's all of this unconscious, insidious programming that exists. And I'm not even talking about anything conspiratorial at all. It's just sort of a collective agreement that this is what it is to be human. And this is part of the human experience, is we buy these things and we like these types of sports teams. And these are the countries that are our allies, that we can go to these places with our passports and they'll be friendly with us. And these are the countries that hate us and they're enemies. And people buy that shit sort of just at face value without ever checking in with who they are in the context of the program.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a very, very interesting viewpoint. One of the things that happened to me this weekend with my vision quest is, you know, I was out in the Sequoia Mountains and I was alone without my electronics, without any people, without any food, without any books, without anything to do. I had a knife, so I learned how to whittle again. I found something to do. Like, I might as well whittle, you know, a little bit.
I was going to ask about this vision quest. That's pretty profound. You got to whittling, did you?
Eventually, in the 47th hour, I saw a stick and I thought, I have a knife. I can actually, maybe I'll whittle a little bit. I didn't do that much, but I took some shavings off of a stick.
Okay.
And you know what I really got is the one, maybe the most profound aspect, or one of a few, but maybe in some ways the most globally profound aspect of it, was that nature's pace, what nature takes into consideration of importance for continuation, has nothing anymore to do with what we think is important.
Yeah.
Like, a day is so long, Sam. A day, from the moment that the sun rises to when the sun sets, it's like 3 centuries long.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you don't have any shit going on, when you don't have to be somewhere, you don't have a Zoom call, you don't have to, like, you know, get gasoline or fill your fridge.
Yeah.
A day goes on and on and on. I'm like, you know, I'm sitting there, I haven't done anything. Maybe I sat down, or maybe cleaned my boots or my tent for a minute, or took a pee or took a poop if I was lucky, or, you know, sat, did some meditation or did a journal. It's like, I don't have to do anything. So then I sit or lie down some more, or take a walk or stretch. And I feel like, okay, it's got to be close to, I don't know, 7 or 8 p.m. I look in the sky, it's not even noon yet. I'm like, whoa. It's like, well, what am I planning to do the rest of this sun? And you get a new realization for that's actually the pace of life. That's not an off pace. That is the pace.
That is the pace. Yeah. Yeah.
And this,
and that's the pace that we our ancestors lived with for millennia. It was that pace. Things happening that slowly.
Yeah.
And it's only over the past couple of decades that this massive, massive increase in the speed of life has occurred.
Exactly. And it's not, it's kind of like, and this idea of just, you know, loving time, like, you know, this thing starts at 6 o'clock and we both have to be here at 6, you know, I may have been 1 minute late, sorry, but, there's a level of stress that comes with this hamster wheel that leaves us blind to the natural flow of how long a day is and how long a night is. Because that's another thing. A night lasts a really long time. Really long time. I fall asleep, I wake up, I fall asleep, I wake up, I fall asleep, I wake up. And it's like, okay, I'm rested. And it's like, we're not even halfway through the night. And there's something very warming about getting, oh, if I could remember, recall, and then incorporate this pace of life into my everyday, it seems like this is actually manageable and consistent with the life that was given to us for real. And the stuff that we do instead that we call life, responsibilities and accountabilities, is what just wears us out and leaves us in this kind of pain and misery as a, an incongruent relationship with the pace of nature.
Okay. I like this. I love to dive a little bit more into this. So if we think about some of the world's great philosophical traditions, one that I've always really resonated with is Taoism. Taoism being really related to this concept of the way, that life is simply happening, and that we can be in a harmonious relationship with the way, with the Tao, or we can be in a disharmonious relationship with the Tao. We can be in either essentially in conflict with how life is occurring, or we can be in the flow of life and sort of, that's essentially what it's all about in a nutshell. But that also is 2,500 years old. Those philosophical constructs about living in harmony with the way of nature came at a time that is now over 2,500 years away in the past, where life was moving at such a different pace than it is now. So my question, I suppose, this is, again, just an open-ended and mostly rhetorical question, but I'd love to explore it as well. Is this still the Tao? Is this still the way when we are moving at this fast-paced speed of commerce and time? And I mean, they were living out of time. This is far before the Gregorian calendar was invented and people were paying attention to their watches and their clocks and their phone and their alarms and all that stuff. So is the experience that we are having now congruent with the Tao, or is this somehow incongruent? And is there a way that we are not paying attention to? Is the Tao something that we're out of? So is my job to sync up with the chaos of modern timing and commerce, etc.? Or is my job to find a more biologically resonant and natural rhythm that is more congruent with what existed years ago? And are we off track as an entire civilization?
It's a completely terrific inquiry. I find myself in the last few weeks, when I'm considering how deeply I am into electronics and buzzing, and, you know, sometimes I feel like I can hear 5G or from my hearing aids or something. I can feel like there's just some natural electronic sound, or even in the Sequoias for the Vision Quest. There were fighter jets doing their routines over sky a couple times a day that would just rip into the experience. It's like, whoa, that is so not consistent with what's going on in my life. And then I would ask myself, who am I to, you know, like you and I maybe have talked about before, who am I to say under any circumstances that how life is being lived now isn't exactly how it's meant to be lived? Exactly. What makes me think that I need to escape the way that life is being lived now into some sort of past-based illusion of how it used to live, or some future-based, you know, like Anders Gustafsson solution of a post-apocalyptic, you know, post-societal collapse, permaculture-based commune that really, you know, it's like, is that closer to the Tao? And I think we equate the Tao with like some sort of natural rhythm brought on by the relationship of Earth and cosmos and luminaries and all that. But maybe the Tao is just, like you say, maybe the Tao is just representative of being in full acceptance, forgiveness, and compassion for exactly how life is being lived at any given second, period. You don't have any, you don't got anything to say about that. I mean, it's not, you have no reason or never, you have no real justification for thinking that the Tao is anything different than exactly how life is going right now.
Yeah, yeah. No one says the Tao is a certain pace, I suppose. No one says the Tao is preferential to a more biologically, ecologically sane type of environment. And yet, the only way that we've ever shifted is by recognizing things that are off about the way that we're living and making changes to move in a direction that we feel is healthier. Mm-hmm. And so there never has, there also has never been a period of life ever throughout history that has maintained a certain structure that hasn't shifted eventually. And so maybe that's all part of it too. The Tao is also being part of, the Tao is being in complete acceptance of the way things are. And the Tao is also being completely willing and able to shift the structure when that is called for, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to make an executive decision here about what you're saying. First of all, by leaving the callback number 1-888-627-6008 for any like cosmic psychonauts out there who think like they want to enter the ring with us on this. And secondly, you know, and it is in a matter of just a massive world scale, you know, global paradigm shift, I'm going to call for a commercial and we'll catch you on the other side.
There we go. All right.
Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Fred again. I wanted to explain to you a little bit about one of the names I have called the Undoctor. What is the Undoctor? Well, after about 15 years in the field of me being misaligned with what I was doing, because I was medicating people even knowing that medications were not the right answer, and I was diagnosing people even though I didn't always believe that they had the diagnosis that I said that they had, even though they did meet the criteria, etc., I like seeing humans for exactly who they are and who they're not, and not as a diagnosis. So in 2006, I began the process of becoming the Undoctor. I unmedicated, undiagnosed, and then undoctrinated a bunch of people. Like, people no longer had to come to a psychiatrist because their condition's cleared. This isn't true for everyone. It may not be true for you, but for some folks who know that their diagnosis doesn't fit and who know that they don't want to keep going through with medications and don't want to be seen as someone who's defective or afflicted, this turned out to be a great intervention. Over time, I stopped doing that, and I no longer do a whole lot of conventional psychiatry. Now I just help people walk through their life and find their true voice. I connect with people straight up, not as if there's a power gradient between a doctor and a patient, but as two humans connecting and resonating with each other. As it turns out, that's where all healing emanates from. So today, I've developed the Welcome to Humanity brand over the last 6 or 7 years, and that really takes into consideration all of this. It is self-explanatory. Basically, each and every experience that we have with humanity is just as exquisite as another, even if it's deeply uncomfortable. From there, we get to actually share these human experiences. From there, we get to resonate and connect, and from there, healing takes place. I also have been helping people with their true voice, and that's why you're here today at True Voice with Dr. Fred. I help people find that true voice, really their authentic self, their core value system, and then deliver it effectively into a world that is eagerly awaiting to hear you. Without your voice, no one will ever hear you. And without your true voice, no one will ever know you. But with your true voice, you can find healing, peace, and love. True voice is what it takes to end all wars. So welcome to True Voice with Dr. Fred. There you go.
That's pretty bold. Your true voice is what it takes to end all wars.
Yeah.
Look at this guy here. That's a audacious statement.
Well, I just think that if we don't talk, we're not going to end any war. So I'm just saying, let's get those words out there, because I think all wars ultimately, at least if they're going to end, they're going to end on the heels of words, on the heel of communication.
Say more about that.
Well, the idea of the conversation is that the greatest threat in the world is not what you think it is, right? It's not a virus. It's not climate change. It's not racism or sex trafficking. It's not, it's not the Supreme Court. It's not wars in Ukraine. The greatest threat in the world is that many people are now feeling stifled or muffled or muzzled or incapable or fearful of actually speaking their truth openly in a world where the truth doesn't appear to always be welcome and may even leave people in a really precarious or even sometimes dangerous state. So because people aren't speaking, that's actually the biggest threat in the world, because all the things I just listed are only going to be dealt with effectively if we can communicate together to deal with whatever it took to get us into trouble in the first place. And so the more silent we become, the more likely we are to just be fodder, to just be fish food for the events that are going on and not speaking what's important to us, which seems to be the only real answer to dealing with any of those or any personal or global issues, which I'll call wars, is what's required. So I'm also going to say that I didn't make up that True Voice Ends Wars. That was actually a classmate, my co-leader in True Voice Podcasting. He said it and I told him I was going to steal it, and he didn't give me any trouble about it. So I didn't make that up, but he did. And so I stole it.
Do you mind if I try to steel man your case just to, for fun? Just to
explore? Yeah, sure. Go ahead for it.
All right. Do you think that we as human beings currently, even if we feel like we are able to self-express as fully as possible and have the freedom of self-expressing as truthfully as possible, do you think that we have the linguistic capacity and empathic capacity combined with the linguistic capacity to actually be able to create something like world peace with the limits of our linguistic capabilities?
Well, I do have an answer prepared for you on this one. So you're not the first one to bring up this cosmic idea, but here's the thing. Voice is not about linguistic utterances and only. So self-expression, as you know, as we look over your shoulders at two of your self-expressive ways, non-utterance-based, non-vocality linguistics that are come out of your guitar or come out of your sacred geometry, the idea here is that we are not limited at all by our voice being what is necessary to take out global warming or wars around the world or global calamities. It is in the world of self-expression, however, perhaps in even areas that are not yet adequately explored, for which the magic of self-expression creating a unified intention seems to me to be the only way to take on any. I don't have a better way to even consider taking those things on. So in my award-winning article in 2000, I think it was 2018, no, 2019, the Journal for Global Transformation, I wrote this article called Global Madness, which I think you've read, which really speaks to what it would take to put 7.8 billion people on the same side of the fence, working together in a communicative way, even with different languages and different communication styles, et cetera. And it would take a threat that was so large that we all realized that our differences were only going to self-annihilate us, and that we would have to have a global interest in not being self-annihilated. So if we didn't want to be self-annihilated and the only way to protect ourselves would be to put 7.8 billion people on the same team, taking on a threat to the earth or a threat to our livelihood from the outside, then that would also create a form of communication, which is what I'm more equating with True Voice than whether or not sounds come out of our vocal cords.
Yeah, no, I get that. It's interesting to consider what that type of a threat would be.
Well, in the article, and the article speaks towards that climate change was clearly not enough. And I think we could see that that a pandemic also was not enough, or we could see that the threat of World War III is simply not enough, or we could see that the threat of, you know, Armageddon or economic collapse is not enough. The thing that I think is very worthwhile, unfortunately, as my heart drops when I say this, is that, you know, you and I start off the show with realizing, like, I don't even know if I want to live any that much longer. That without that, the chance of putting 7.8 billion people together to, like, fight off a threat kind of goes down the toilet. I, you know, if there's a group of, like, why? I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck. I've already lived my full life. I'm not working with the Russians, and I'm not working with my enemies, and I'm not working with those people over there. I'm not taking the risk of compromising my truest sense of what's important in order to fight off a Martian invasion, which is, you know, the metaphor I used in the article. No, I just assume, you know, if they're going to take us out, then I guess I'll probably go out with the rest of them, hopefully, or something, you know. And that's a whole new attitude that I know in my life I was never even really, maybe I was doing it with some degree of, you know, some degree of bravado that I could say something like, I'm not afraid of death or something. But these days, there really is a part of me that's like, I don't know. If that's what's going to happen, then I hope they have an exit door that's not too painful.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting because it makes me consider what are the most fundamental human motivators. You know, and I think it might be rather cynical to say this, but I think frequently the most fundamental human motivator is fear. And the idealist in me would like to believe that the most fundamental human motivator is love.
Right.
But I don't think that's actually the case. I think the most fundamental human motivator actually is fear, always has been fear. And so once you take the fear of death out of the equation, well, is it complacency? Is it resignation? Is it just kind of like, well, oh, well, you know, like, yeah, I mean, I'd like to say that I'd like to have a more biographically heroic outcome to all of this and say I fought until the last breath to save the world. But, you know, at a certain point, if the world's going to shit and it seems like most people are living in fear and scarcity, I just don't really want to be a part of that planet, you know? So how much of this, how much of our mentality is based on our current experience of life the way that it is? Because I think that, yeah, it sort of goes back and touches on what we were talking about earlier. How much of my gratitude and for what this life is and what it has given me is based entirely on the circumstances of not unchallenging, because I've certainly had a hell of a challenging, but relatively comforting life where I had some kind of a faith in a positive outcome. And in the absence of that faith of a positive outcome, I might be thinking very differently about whether or not it was worth being here.
Well, you know, it's interesting as you speak. I was with you to a certain point until I got an aha moment, which was the aha moment is fear still is motivating even someone who loses their fear of death, because in that case, what you fear is the life that's on the other side of death. You're like, look, I am afraid to live into the world that is designed as I see it likely to unfold. Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be a slave to the machine. I don't want to do things that don't serve me. I'm afraid to be forced or to make a decision to live that life. It's still a fear response, but it's not our typical fear response, which is the number one, you know, like who's number one? What's been the number one fear in our entire lifetime and maybe for, you know, for centuries is the fear of death. But maybe there's something here that's actually more frightening than death. And that we didn't see that coming, but there's like a new kid in town that's even more frightening than death. And that's the design of the post-apocalyptic existence.
Yeah. Well, and it makes me ask, is that a fear or is that an acknowledgement? And, you know, I'm imagining this hypothetical situation, an acknowledgement that there's that life in that particular, with those particular conditions that we can, I think, both imagine with, you know, corpses everywhere and burning buildings and, you know, you can go to your worst part of your imagination here. It's just that uninspiring that there's no real interest or inspiration in continuing to have a life as part of this. I don't know that that necessarily equates with fear as I see it, because fear, I think, is a sort of a biological response to this kind of protective mechanism, that there's something worth protecting. And in that situation, I might think, you know what, there's not really much worth protecting anymore. It's just, I might as well go down with the rest of it, you know, and compost myself and go back into the cosmos.
Sam, so what about those? Have you seen the Giants? God, they had this great game last week. It was unbelievable. Yeah. And how's the stocks performing? How are your stocks performing?
It's apparently not well. Apparently not well. We had a really bad day on Wall Street, apparently.
Oh, really? Like one of the worst ever?
I just before we hopped on, I happened to check the news, and apparently the stock market plunged today, did a deep dive. So
I wonder what the story is there. What are they saying? What are they attributing that to? The apocalypse?
Something having to do with investors catching up with the effects of inflation or something like that.
I see. Oh, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
but did they talk about the Giants?
Optimistic podcast today, isn't it?
Did they talk about the Giants or anything like that? Or the Dodgers? NFL started Sunday.
What's that?
The NFL started back up on Sunday.
Well, hey, all right. Yeah. Did you watch any of that?
No, fuck no. I don't even have a TV, but I'm going to look now to see if my Lions won. Because at this point, you see, this is what all I have left is to go check out when I was, you know, when I was a kid, this is all I had to do was either deal with the chaos of life or go check out. You know, go check out what the Lions did, you know, which they never won ever. So the Lions never won, you know.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Do they win these days?
Wow. The Detroit Lions, underdogs in 24 straight games, are actually favored to win this next week versus the Washington Commanders, which
I haven't even heard that name. Oh, they're no longer going by the Redskins. I think they call
no Redskins is non-politically correct, bro. Don't ever
utter that word Redskin. Anymore.
Don't do it. It's our word. Don't go there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Soon, markets plunge as inflation data undercuts Wall Street's optimism. Mm. That's today's New York Times.
So the markets plunge.
As inflation data undercuts Wall Street's optimism, stocks plunged, government bond yields soared, and the dollar bounced after investors were wrong-footed by a report showing high price increases last month. So there we go. There we have it.
All right. So that means a lot of people lost a lot of money today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin probably doing good, no?
Oh, I think Bitcoin has unfortunately been following the stock market, which was not exactly what Bitcoin's designers had in mind. I think this whole sort of, I think there, I've noticed there being a little bit of more humility, let's say, on the part of the cryptocurrency investors than I used to hear looking, in terms of it's utopian looking lame. Future.
Can you see that?
Yeah.
Oh boy. Yeah, the red part is where we are now.
Yeah.
I think all we can really hope for is the Dodgers to win a pennant.
Yeah, there you go. No, I mean, the sort of sarcastic, cynical part of me is getting a little bit of a laugh out of the sort of cryptocurrency utopian types who thought that this was going to be the future of money and that we're going to take over the world economy through, you know, decentralized banking, et cetera. And those voices have been somewhat subdued lately.
Yeah, lately they have. Yeah, it was Bitcoin is supposed to be at like 300,000 by now, and last I looked, like today, it's hovering around 20,000, which is
pretty- I wiped my ass with a Bitcoin earlier today.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Okay, so where what's left to appreciate on the planet? Here's what I decided. I just had a course, you know, on every other Tuesday I do my True Voice Mastermind. And we looked at six different things, 15 minutes based on six different human experiences. And these six experiences, just to let you know, and I think we have enough time to at least take a look at them, is not one at a time, but you can get them. The first one was celebration. The second one was gratitude. The third one was acceptance. The fourth one was forgiveness. The fifth one was love. And the sixth one was peace. And we went into breakout rooms, really flipping the switch that what happens to life when we take these things on for real. Again, it's celebration, gratitude, acceptance, forgiveness, love, and peace. And those seem like if you got any of those in your life still, which isn't very hard, you know, you can generate those from any given space, even if the world is going to hell in a handbasket. And I would say that that's what we're doing here. Why would we show up here? Why would you not already have ended it? You know, there's something like, well, I like Fred. I like Sam. I like to discuss, you know, it's fun. Like there's something fun about being who we get to be with each other, something rewarding. And even as we brush up against some of these particular features of what seems to be high vibrational, beautiful experiences in life, maybe those are things that are worth living for and finding, not because you need a reason to find them, but in fact, you're the author of your world and can flip the switch into any of those things at any given moment, no matter what's going on in your world. Thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, it brings me back to our conversation a couple weeks ago about the difference between hope and faith. And, you know, hope is this sort of, can be somewhat a naive expectation that somehow the external world will conform to our preferences so that we can feel better about what's going on. And faith is instead a belief that all of this is part of a larger grand scheme that we can't possibly imagine, and that through the collective efforts of human beings and our higher power, that we will learn from the process, and that we will make it through, and that there is value in the experience. And so I think it comes down to that. It comes down to having some sort of faith that there is value in this experience, and that this exchange that we are having right now is not futile. That there's something that provokes us to want to have these types of exchanges, these types of conversations. I'm not really interested self-masturbation verbally and intellectually so that the world can hear it. But I just enjoy the exchange, you know? So there's something there. There's something to that underlying sense that there is value in the midst of the seemingly chaotic experience that we are having together. And I think that that faith has always been the thing that has always carried humans through, even in the darkest of times. You know, somehow through the Middle Ages, humans made it through. We made it through pandemics far worse than the one that we just had. You know, somehow people made it through, you know, the Holocaust. There's something in the human spirit that can, that is resilient. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, this is all happening for a reason.
I guess there really has been times where the experience of life was much darker than what we're experiencing now, because let's face it, if we look at the now right here, I'm sitting in a padded, warm, you know, fully roofed, no bombs flying over, thank God. And I have a gorgeous wife and I have these three cats and a super view, and I got food in the fridge that I couldn't even want anything better. I'm talking to a great friend. We're communicating. I'm not in any physical pain. I'm not under any threat or siege. Like, actually, if you look at what's so right now, there's a reason to get that. Not only is this not a dark moment, but it's actually one of the, if not the brightest moment of my entire life, if you take a photograph of it and don't look into the future of what, you know, and don't consider what the future is likely to unfold here shortly into as being part of the present experience. That's an interesting dichotomy as well. Super interesting is that, in fact, in the midst of preparing for maybe whatever is coming down the pike, many of us are getting sort of the opportunity to live life at its very,
about as good as it's ever been.
What's that?
About as good as it's ever been.
About as good as it's ever been, or ever could be for anyone.
Yeah. And maybe, just, you know, maybe there is a tipping point where enough people experience life as good as it's ever been, that that becomes a default that we expect. We want everyone to be able to have somewhat of an opportunity for living life in that way. And that, that sort of collectively shifts the direction of the world. I don't know. Who knows? I remember Alan Watts saying at one point, he said something along the lines of, we've become so comfortable with our attachments that the only way forward is utopia.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. Wow. It's very weird. And it feels like my mind was programmed to be able to, like, if I just would have followed what the teachers and the schooling and the conventional educational system funneled into my inquiry of what in life is important, then my mind would have like exploded by now. That in some ways, what I really have is like, wow, it's still getting stretched to its very edges. I'm like, whoa, this is beyond any kind of explanation that I have available. And of course, I now get that I'm just addicted to having reasons and explanations and understandings of how shit works. But even having access to the idea that I don't have to be limited by my addiction to, you know, cause and effect or sequencing, explaining why things happen, you know, that's a gift in its own right, that I can consistently throw my entire reality paradigm into the cauldron and start over on any given second. And, you know, I really do honor whatever. And I feel like our friendship and our relationship has really allowed me to play that game somehow, like a capacity to take everything I know. And I mean, everything I know, and question it. And in fact, without question, without a problem, like, you know, being dealt five cards of poker and then like throwing all five of them back in, give me five more, you know, even if some of them are pretty good, like, whatever, you know, like nothing is worth sticking around except maybe the Tao, which of course, you know, that, which is however that statement goes, you know, that, you know, how there's some famous statement that if you see that it's not the Tao, that's what you can call it.
The Tao that can be spoken is not the real Tao.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So, yeah.
I don't know if anyone followed any of what we just shared over the past.
Probably
hour.
Not, but it's good. If they did. Probably nobody.
Amen listened. To them. I don't know if I don't know if I should admire them or call them crazy if they just followed that whole 57 minutes.
Did you? Are you the one that sent me that ayahuasca thing? That guy who goes on a job interview after like bald eagle.
Remind me, I don't remember. So it's
guy is interviewing like a corporate job, and he's interviewing. He goes, "Well, my name is Mr. Bald Eagle," and you know, he's like, and the corporate guy's trying to ask him real questions, and he's coming out with these ayahuascarian answers. And
oh, I think I remember this.
And then he finally says, "Okay, Mr. Eagle, we'll get back to you later in the week." All right, folks. Well, thanks for hanging on with True Voice with Dr. Fred and Sam the Warrior. It's been a pleasure being with you. I hope you have enjoyed this. We didn't mean to take you through any dark, painful times. If you see yourself looking in your rearview mirror, in your bathroom mirror, your kitchen reflection, off of your, off of your drink, your drinking glass, and you got a smile on your face, that's really what we wanted. And
I think we should also say the opinions shared on this podcast are not necessarily the opinions of True Voice Podcast and or Sam Morris and Dr. Fred. Yeah. We take no responsibility for anything that we just said.
That's true. Exactly. And I think with that, I think that's what really the whole point of this thing is. Please don't hold us to what we said, because we reserve the right to actually say the opposite at any given time and mean it as well. So thanks for hanging on. It's been a pleasure. Sam, thanks for being here. It's always lovely. And Tim, thanks for taking care. It's Tim, right? Is that what we decided?
Thomas.
Thanks, Thomas, for taking care of us. And we will catch y'all on the flip side. See you next Tuesday at True Voice with Dr. Britt.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers. Hello, everybody, and I just wanted to thank you for getting through another episode of True Voice with Dr. Fred. Wasn't that great? It is so much fun to interact with people and then interact with my listenership about really finding True Voice and then bringing it forward. I really have never done anything more important than this, and I'm finally aligned with myself by helping others find their True Voice. Let's find your alignment. What do you really want in your life?